Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 140 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, good to see you.
Good to see you, Jason.
Man, these episodes just keep ticking off. So getting close to the 150 mark. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah, the episodes keep ticking off and 2024 keeps like winding down towards December, and I feel like the Bitcoin price is, the spring is loading up.
Yeah, it's been what, like 8 or 9 months of just sideways action, staying between the 60 and 70 grand range, which is almost unprecedented for Bitcoin these days.
Yeah, it's funny, man. I'm visiting my parents. They live in a little more of an affluent, larger town than I do. And I was wearing a El Salvador Bitcoin Beach shirt. I took my kids to a trampoline park, and nobody ever says anything to me when I wear a Bitcoin shirt. And this guy, he's like, "Oh, I like your shirt." So it kind of started a conversation about Bitcoin. He'd been in it for a little while and all these things. And one of the first things he said was, "How about this chop?" I was like, "Yeah, man, it's just like, I'll take it. It's weird and it doesn't happen often, but I mean, all it is it gives long-term holders a longer period of time to accumulate Bitcoin and hold on to it, and it decreases the supply. So it's kind of stinks, and it's not really like, obviously I want it to go to the moon, but it's in the long term, it's good for it.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been telling people for a while that I want Bitcoin to go up, but I want it to stay down for a while because I want to just acquire some more of it. So let's acquire more while it's at a lower price. And I mean, there are some positive things. I think the unemployment rate fell by 0.1%, which is apparently a big deal. It means that the economy is stronger and there's probably a less chance of having another 50 basis point rate cut. So that could be good, probably not as good for Bitcoin. If you have bigger rate cuts, that means there's liquidity, global liquidity gets there faster, and all of a sudden Bitcoin goes up. But there's still, I think, what, a 97% chance of a 25% basis point cut. So still looking good.
Yeah, I mean, when you can publish the data on unemployment and inflation, and those are the metrics you use to adjust your interest rates, you can kind of choose how you do it and how long it takes, and you can fluff the numbers a little bit in your favor in order to, you know, kind of create this illusion or this impression of the economy that you want it to look like. I mean, they talk about like a soft landing. We're going to do the soft landing. Da, da, da. I'm like, it may look like it, like the numbers may look good, like, and all you may be doing is kicking the can down the road, you know?
Well, it was interesting. I think part of the numbers said there was over 500,000 jobs that were added in this past month, but the actual number of hours worked didn't change.
Yeah, it's funny. The headline is still one thing, and then you go through it and you're like, oh, all of these jobs are public sector jobs. Yeah. Like, those aren't creating any GDP. Those are just milking, you know, the production of the private sector. And so maybe this isn't so great. Or like you said, it's like, yep, there's three times as many part-time jobs as full-time jobs, but they just count as jobs.
It's kind of like all the ports that were on strike last week. There were 25,000 jobs between all those different ports around the U.S., but somehow 50,000 workers were striking. So, and it's partly because there's a bunch of workers that are paid to stay home as part of these agreements that they come up with, right? So it's kind of interesting how it all happens.
Yeah, I mean, the strikes, the irritated labor is kind of that second order impact of inflation. You know, it's like, private sector non-unions, they don't strike. They just change jobs and get higher paying jobs in order to keep up with inflation when their job, you know, when their paychecks doesn't feel like it's enough. Unions strike, and we've had like more strikes and those conversations and all of those issues in the last couple of years than I think it's any time in history. But, you know, there's a population adjustment there, because if you have more people, you're going to have more in more unions, you're going to have more strikes. But yeah, we're going to be eating this inflation impact for a long time, and irritated labor is part of it.
Yeah, so getting back to Bitcoin too, I know one of the things that's kind of interesting and will be intriguing to keep an eye on, FTX is about to release about $16 billion back to their creditors over the next few months. All of that in cash, zero of it in Bitcoin.
I wonder what they're going to buy.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. I mean, we talked last week how much people were buying and how much is being actually mined every day. I think it's what, 450 Bitcoin a day, and we're buying thousands at a time, right? So it's going to be intriguing to see what happens, especially a month from now. We'll officially know who the U.S. president is going to be in January, and the uncertainty will be over.
Yeah, like it will be nice to have it settled. I hope it's settled and it's not like going to be held up in court cases and crap like that. But I feel like the blue team really is just trying to get to neutral and not say much. And the red team's like full steam ahead, pro Bitcoin. Let's do Bitcoin transactions and go to PubKey and buy $1,000 worth of burgers and Diet Cokes. And so, you know, I think either way, I think you get a little bit less uncertain. But yeah, if the red team takes over a little bit, then I think you'll have people more confident in accumulating more Bitcoin.
Well, it's interesting. There's been a lot more talk lately on if the red team wins, who's going to be the new SEC chair? And the guy that I think is leading right now is Robinhood's chief legal officer, Dan Gallagher. So he's been hugely important to Robinhood in getting them more involved into crypto. I think there's also a couple of other people, Trump's former CFTC chair, Chris Jean Harlow, and then Hester Pierce, of course. And I think it would be awesome for Hester to be in there for sure, since she's been hugely critical of Gary Gensler's approach to crypto in general.
Oh yeah, Hester Pierce, as long as she can hold what she's got, that's great. But if she can move up in any of these from a visibility standpoint or an authority standpoint, would be great for Bitcoin and crypto.
Yeah, and then on the blue team, Mark Cuban had said he was interested, but he came out this week and said he had a conversation with Gary Gensler, and he's like, Gary thinks he's saving the world from crypto, which is, he's drinking Elizabeth Warren's Kool-Aid, apparently. Mark said he was not interested in being the SEC chair, but he said he would like to be interviewed for it because he would give them some insight on how bad they've been screwing it up.
Yeah, I listened to Mark Cuban on the All In podcast, and it was like pretty contested between him and David Sacks, who's the kind of the Republican member of the four tech billionaires hosts of the show. And they didn't get into crypto much. In this chop, it's like as long as Bitcoin chops around, then people don't want to talk about it. They want to talk about it when it crashes, and they want to talk about it when it spikes. But if it's just bouncing around, but you know, up and down 20% all year, like it just isn't in anybody's discussions. Like an hour and a half of listening to them kind of go back and forth. And yeah, he did mention that he didn't want to be in that position. And part of it was like, I don't want to get into this. My family, like if I get into that side of it, my family's weird enough. Like it's tough to have a normal life for my family. So it gets impossible if I get into politics. So, you know, whether that's running for president or running for, or putting his name in the hat for these appointed positions. But no, it was kind of a weird interaction, that entire podcast.
Well, I think he said one of the other things he likes to do is he just likes to fuck with the SEC. So if he was actually at the SEC, he would not be able to do that anymore, right? So
yeah. Well, his take on inflation was insane. Like, I like Mark Cuban. I don't think I think he's got some biases that he can't shake, because his ideas on Trump starting inflation by the fuel issues, or the oil issues that happened with Syria, he had a crazy take on why we have inflation. He did not talk about government spending and why inflation was so crazy. And then he traced it back to these oil deals that Trump did. And I'm like, this is a crazy thing to say. Because, I mean, not to get into the politics or whatever, but when oil went negative, the oil futures went negative and oil was dirt cheap, Trump was president and he wanted to fill up the strategic petroleum reserves and Congress blocked it. So like that doesn't jive, you know what I mean? And so so I think in a lot of ways, Mark Cuban's worth listening to. On the business side, he's great. Entrepreneurial side, he's great. He understands what it takes to start and grow a business, and he understands what kind of people you need. And so I'll listen to him on that side. But once he gets into like macroeconomic and geopolitics, I'm like, dude, this is not your spot. Stick to what you're good at.
Yeah. I think he even offered Elon Musk some help in helping grow Tesla here recently too. So we'll see if Elon Musk actually takes him up on that, since those two seem to have very opposing views at this point, Tim.
If Elon Musk, he was on a podcast and he basically said, yeah, I'm screwed. If Trump loses, I'm screwed. He's like, I don't know how long my jail sentence is going to be, but I'm so screwed. He's like, I'm so out there. I'm stuck my neck out so far. So like the Tesla stuff, I mean, granted, SpaceX is going to go save astronauts that are stranded by Boeing when Boeing got twice as much money as SpaceX to send people into space. But I mean, even Elon isn't talking that much about Bitcoin and crypto, you know, and he's like, he likes to kind of poke the bear with the Doge meme comments and things like that. But, yeah, you know, it's not even something that he's talking about. So like I said, Bitcoin's just not in the news right now because, I mean, you got this huge political news cycle that's overbearing and insane. We have constant hurricanes destroying the Southeast, you know, so there are things that are important to talk about. And I understand that. But yeah, I mean, like Bitcoin doesn't get a mention in any way anymore.
Yeah, I did see Ohio actually has some interesting bills getting, put up for proposed. One of the senators there, Antani, he has proposed some legislation to establish Ohio as one of the pretty much few states to really accept crypto payments for all state and local taxes, right? And if you think you've heard of this before, well, it did happen back in like 2018. There was an initiative by the state treasurer at the time, who was Josh Mandel, and he did this for Ohio, and it got very short-lived because the Ohio Attorney General ruled that the State Board of Deposits needed to approve the program, and they never voted on it. So it just had to end, right? So now it's coming back up, and I mean, just imagine if Ohio would have got into Bitcoin in 2018 and just seen that run up. Like, it would be amazing for them. But the other kind of cool part about a lot of these bills too that they're doing is it's going to permit the state universities and the pension funds to invest in the crypto asset class too, which would be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really what it takes is one state getting into it and then allocating some to the state budget and, you know, reserves. And then you wait 4 years and every other state's like, oh, we should have done that. No. You know, I mean, it's El Salvador, it's MicroStrategy, you know, it's all working. And this is when we're in this 8 month of chop, you know, if we do get this meteoric rise of Bitcoin price, like we normally do around now, I think we start to see it in the news. And I think more people start to jump in and more companies and more countries and all those things. But you know, it's chicken and egg. Like, does price go up and more people jump in? But more people have to jump in order for price to go up. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's interesting too. We've talked a lot about Bitcoin mining and some of the benefits that it's been able to offer not only states, but other countries as well. Arkansas kind of had the opposite happen. So there's a miner there, Newray Mining, that they got approved for some property to put in a data center to mine Bitcoin. And now they've just had a law created that they think is just for them. And it targets a local noise ordinance. And it only focuses on them, not of any of the other big businesses there that create what they think is more noise. So what's interesting is they're not really the only miner, I think, in the U.S. that is having this issue. And really only one in the world. I think Norway had a huge issue here recently. But what's crazy to me is you're not hearing about any AI data centers at this issue. Then they're doing the same thing, right? It's only if it's a Bitcoin miner. So there's something going on where people are literally still trying to target crypto and Bitcoin. We've talked about Chokepoint 2.0. I mean, this seems very similar to one of the things they're doing is trying to cut off the miners to make it harder for that to happen here in the U.S. too.
Yeah, and you know, I'm always like shrugging off these attacks against Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining and all this because it's like, okay, there's a noise ordinance. Instead of being air cooled, we'll be liquid cooled, and our pumps don't make noise.
Yeah.
So we can solve the noise problem, or the noise problem is already solved. So, you know, to me, this is a problem that you can avoid even if you do lose the battle and there are noise ordinances and you're targeted and they're constantly monitoring you. You can just change the way you do things or find another jurisdiction and put it by a hydroelectric dam that's where no one lives, you know.
Yeah. So Bitwise has been pretty active during all of this. I mean, I view Bitwise as probably one of the most crypto-friendly ETF guys out there, right? And I think you've been a huge fan of listening to a lot of those guys over the past year plus. They just announced that they are going to be filing for an XRP ETF, which is kind of interesting. And then on top of that, they had four futures, crypto futures ETFs that there are three of them. They're merging them all together. I think they're going to call it the Trendwise Bitcoin and Treasuries Rotation Strategy ETF, which allows them, based on their proprietary signal, to go back and forth between futures and US Treasuries, crypto futures and US Treasuries, which will be interesting to see how that does too.
I mean, you know, timing the market stuff, especially crypto markets and things like that. But if you could hit one of those where you shift into treasuries and the crypto market goes down 60%, 70%, and then you shift back into crypto, if you got that right once, the returns would be crazy.
Yeah. Well, and shoot, you think about it, you're about 18 months away before just switching over to treasuries and then coming back a year later
Yeah.
and putting into futures, right? So, I mean, it's theoretically there's a lot of history that they follow if they want to follow the trend, and that might not be a bad way of doing it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, not like I still think until there isn't a boom cycle and a bust cycle, then there's going to be a boom and a bust cycle. Like, you know, prove me wrong and then I'll believe it. And I listened to a podcast. There's like a quarterly masterclass podcast. Jeff Ross is on there. That guy, American HODL, who's been in Bitcoin for since the beginning, really. They were both pretty level-headed. And Ross was like a hedge fund guy and he's got a PhD. But most PhDs I dismiss because they don't speak and think in ways that are practical. But this guy's actually pretty good. Anyway, man, all of them were convinced Bitcoin cycle's gonna happen. They laid out their thesis for how money flows in, and basically the money starts to unlock as things go up. And yeah, I mean, you want to get bullish, I think I put it up on the Twitter feed, a link to it. But they're like, I could see $475,000 Bitcoin in the next 12 months. Like, yeah, you just don't. I haven't heard stuff like that in a while. You know, like people love to talk about that stuff, but everybody gets kind of gun shy because they've missed so bad. Like the last cycle when it was 2020 and 2021, it was like, oh, we're definitely gonna have 100,000. Like 100,000 is a no-brainer. Well, how high can we go? And then the legs got cut out from underneath it, and we didn't hit 70. So, you know, they're hesitant to put numbers and time frames and things like that on Bitcoin price, but these guys were actually doing it. And I'm like, man, it's fun to just think about $500,000 Bitcoin.
Would be nice, that's for sure.
It would be in the news too.
That it would. So speaking of the news, we've talked about Franklin Templeton a handful of times over the past couple of months, and they had this government money fund, FOBXX, that they've listed on a ton of different blockchains. Well, they just added Aptos. So we had, I think 2 weeks ago they did Avalanche, now it's Aptos. And it's interesting for those people that aren't aware of Aptos, that is the old Facebook slash Meta development that got spun out of Facebook and then started into Aptos. So kind of interesting. I think who was the other guy that's hugely optimistic on Aptos too, that he was one of the founders of BitMEX.
Out of my lane. I'm not going to be able to help you here.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think he's been a kind of a big believer in what they're doing because they're doing things a little bit different than everybody else too. So we'll see how it goes, but it's just interesting that a company like Franklin Templeton is spreading their wings on a handful of different blockchains and trying to make it so that everybody can use these different blockchains no matter what they're on.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, when the Bitcoin ETFs came out, everybody on that side of it were saying, oh, it's going to stop at Bitcoin. It's not, you know, it's not going to, maybe Ethereum in a months or years, but it's not going to go down the chain. These traditional finance guys aren't going to go down the chain. I'm like, if things work out at Bitcoin, then they're going to go to Ethereum. And then once it works out on Ethereum, it's going to be wide open. And so I think with the XRP stuff and the, all, I mean, talking about Aptos and Franklin Templeton, like, it's gonna happen. I mean, we're not even a year deep into this Bitcoin spot ETFs. We have financial institutions that haven't completed their due diligence yet, like whether they haven't even decided if they're going to allow clients' money to go into the funds, and we already have this conversation. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, so speaking of some financial institutions, BlackRock made some interesting presentations down in Brazil. So they had a presentation called Bitcoin Through the Lens of a Global Monetary Alternative. And it's pretty much, it was BlackRock, who's the largest asset manager in the world. They made a very well-polished case for Bitcoin to clients. And they showed this chart, which was just a huge chart of decimation of the dollar's purchasing power since the establishment of the Fed, right? So you have Brazil, who was always crypto friendly before. Now you have BlackRock telling them that Bitcoin is a great alternative to the US dollar and showing them a chart of why and how much the dollar has lost its purchasing power. It's kind of interesting, right? So, I mean, I know we expected BlackRock to do this, but for them to actually present it to the top Brazilian investors, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. And so that slide had, or that presentation had another one that had Bitcoin, gold, and it was either U.S. Treasuries or U.S. securities.
Treasuries.
And it compared them like, okay, well, you know, there's a high risk here, or, you know, red, green, and red, yellow, and green. Like, this is good. And this on all these different categories as far as being an investable asset. And I was looking through it and everything, and it was like, it didn't dawn on me until I saw it again from someone else on Twitter. And I was like, BlackRock's got Bitcoin beside gold and treasuries. Like, it's not saying like some crazy, like, oh, you know, put in, stay away from it, look how bad it is, right? But it was making a case for as to why Bitcoin should be considered along with or instead of gold and treasuries. I'm like, this is a long way from where we were a year ago.
Yeah, that is very true. Well, it's interesting too. So SWIFT, which is pretty much how everybody moves their money around these days, they are apparently going to start digital asset trials on its network in 2025. So they want to connect all the different blockchains with all the traditional currency interactions, and that will start next year. So that's exciting to see too.
I mean, SWIFT, I feel like SWIFT is like two orders of technology behind crypto. Like, I feel like SWIFT is a phone, like a dial-up phone network that hasn't even gotten to the internet yet. So if they're gonna, that's a big project to update SWIFT.
Yeah, I thought Chainlink was already interacting with them or talking with them, but I'm not sure what the details are of that. There hasn't really been a lot posted, but it's, I mean, when you have these huge companies like a SWIFT saying, oh yeah, we got to get involved in blockchain, the tides are turning. And it kind of goes back to the politics where everybody's saying it almost doesn't matter who wins from a blockchain perspective, right? It's, there's so many pro crypto and pro blockchain people that things are moving forward no matter what happens.
Yeah. And even on the blue team side, if things go that way, I think that it's a little bit of a slower crawl forward, but it's still forward. It's still up and to the right in not just in dollar terms, but innovation and acceptance, legislation, like friendly legislation, friendlier regulations. I still think it's improving as time goes on. I just think because the red wants to look so different than the blue, that's one way where they can be like, hey, look how different we are. they're bad. We're good. This is a good thing. Here you go. And so that's, I think that's one of the main reasons why it'll advance quicker if Trump wins in November.
So one of the competitors to Swift is Ripple, and Ripple is now expanding in Latin America. They have enabled Mercado Bitcoin, which is one of the largest crypto exchanges in Latin America. They're going to use the Ripple payment solution to do all the cross-border transactions. So, I mean, I feel like Ripple bulls have been talking about stuff like this for a long time, and now we're starting to see more of it. I still don't know what that does to the price of XRP, but it is good because that now can happen at a couple of seconds instead of a couple of weeks like you and I have experienced in the past, trying to get money from one place to another overseas. Goodness.
Yeah, it's amazing what a company's able to do when the regulators are off their back a little bit, or a judge rules in their favor, and other companies will talk to them about their product and their service without having to be completely afraid that it's going to get shut down and it's a complete waste of time. So, I mean, you talk about regulation. This is why it's important to have friendly regulation, right? Swift, they're never going to talk to them. Banks are never going to talk to an XRP or a Ripple if Ripple's currently in litigation with the SEC. And so now that's at least somewhat over. I think it never ends, but at least they can go to them and say, hey, look, here's the judge's ruling. We're in the clear, and we think we're just fighting some of these ghost battles.
Yeah, I think they have a little bit more time to appeal. The SEC does on some of that. So hopefully that passes and we put all this behind us, but we'll see where that goes. I know we have talked about Russia a lot in the past month or so on how they went from not crypto friendly to a lot more crypto friendly. And Chain Analysis has done some interesting insights into Russia and said Russia is definitely using a lot of crypto a lot right now. And they've become kind of an international force of using crypto. And a lot of it's because they are trying to evade their sanctions, right? But they also have apparently ransomware attacks, and they've been recently doing more interference and disinformation campaigns targeting the US elections again, buying social media platforms and doing something. And I'm not sure what they're talking about, at least what more types of disinformation they're providing than both of the other political parties in the US are doing. But yeah, they definitely become a huge crypto proponent now, which is kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, like over the last 3-4 years, everything has just kind of pushed Russia and China together politically. Like that's not a good thing for the United States. Neither one of them alone is a big deal as a competitor, China being much closer than Russia, but you combine the two and now it's a little bit of a closer competitor as a group. And they kind of are starting to have a similar feel on crypto, where it's like, we're against crypto, and then the numbers on the blockchain are like, no, they're not. Both of those countries are like, yeah, we're banning crypto. And then it's like, we're the number one or number two user of crypto in the world.
Well, and we haven't really talked a lot about BRICS, and those two are a huge piece of that, right? But a lot of that is they're talking about digital solutions of how BRICS can do all their interaction without using the US dollar. So they're doing a lot of that, from what it looks like, the little bit that I read is they're doing that with blockchain. So,
yeah, I mean, that's if you were going to start something new, I don't think you would be like, you know what we need to do? We need to mint some gold coins. I think you're just like, you know what we need to do? We need to skip all this other crap and we need to go straight to blockchain. Look how good it works.
Exactly. The other thing that was really interesting that I saw was UAE. They just exempted all crypto transactions from the VAT, the value added tax, and they made it retroactive all the way back to January 1st of 2018. Oh, so wow. That's really cool. I wish other countries in the United States would do stuff like that too. Right? Or not that, but just taxes in general, right? Which is the way that UAE handles their taxes. But that would be amazing. So hopefully more people follow in their footsteps.
Yeah, just give me a de minimis tax exemption. So if any transaction under $300 or $600 is tax exempt, because it sucks.
Yeah, it's painful. The other thing that was interesting from a world news perspective that I saw was Starling Bank, which is an online bank that had previously banned all crypto related transactions because they had gotten their hand slapped for doing crypto stuff, right? They were just fined £29 million, which is like $38 million by the UK's Financial Conduct Authority for its shockingly lax sanction controls. They got rid of crypto apparently, but they still let a ton of high risk customers in and to use their bank. So now they were initially handed like a $41 million pound fine, but that they allowed them to get a 30% discount because they agreed to resolve all the matters. Kind of goes back to this whole be careful about thinking that just because you're using a bank, that the bank can't tell you you can't do this anymore type thing. So I'm a huge fan of what Bitcoin has been enabling people to kind of become their own bank and make transactions without getting approval from whoever they need to get approval from.
Yeah, I mean, it's there's definitely value there. I think most people will not see it because they just don't think that the bank would do anything against them because it hasn't happened to them. But it'll only happen to somebody else. It won't happen to me. But it's nice to have the capability of transacting without anyone saying it's okay.
So in unrelated news to all this, there's a new Bitcoin documentary coming out on HBO. I don't know if you heard about this one.
Yeah.
They are saying that they are going to release who Satoshi is on that. And if you look at Polymarket, apparently Polymarket expects it to be Len Sassman, who is one of the original CryptoPunks. Whoever it is, there's about $67 billion worth of Bitcoin in Satoshi's wallets. The benefit, if people do believe it's Len Sassman, he's been dead for a while. It's probably not moving very far. And I think there's actually an article that somebody wrote up that gave a ton of background into what Len was able to do in this whole industry that apparently is worth reading. But even Len's wife came out and said, as far as I know, Len is not Satoshi. But it also has not stopped the meme coin space from creating meme coins for Len and his cats or whatever it is, right? And we'll see if any of those take off here in another week or so when that documentary gets released.
Yeah, I've seen that and I'm like, yeah, I'm sure it's one of the obvious guys and nobody just figured it out. Good job, HBO. Way to come in and tell everybody, you know, 15 years later that why didn't you guys just, it's obviously this guy.
Yeah.
Like if it was obvious, then we would know it. So dumb.
Yeah. We talked about Nigeria a lot. So tomorrow, which will be the 9th of October, Tigran has another court appointment. So this appointment is for the judge to determine if he can be released from bail. So, and what's interesting, I've been reading a little bit more about him because, I mean, I know we knew he worked for the IRS, but he has kind of been put in this legendary status because he was one of the main guys that was able to take down everybody at Silk Road back in the day. So he is probably the best in terms of blockchain sleuthing and finding out what's going on with all of that, right? So hopefully he gets released from bail. I know there's more people from, I think it's actually one of the guys from Georgia has been a huge proponent in trying to push that, hey, we released Brittany Griner from Russia. We gave him this arms trader and made a trade. And now that guy is apparently providing a bunch of arms back to the Middle East. Why can't we do something with Tigran? Because he is a U.S. citizen and he's not a celebrity, but he is a U.S. citizen, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm not sure why this is taking so long. Like usually if you have an American passport, we come and help you.
Yeah. I think a lot of them were saying that this administration has not wanted to be very forceful with other economies or other countries. And when you have an economy the size of the U.S., you can use that to do what you need to do. Another, we've talked about NFT. There was a punk number 1563 that just changed hands for 24,000 ETH. Just like 56 million or something like that. Which the last all-time high for punks was like 23.7 back in early February. Now, the only catch to all this is it was a flash loan that was used to pay for this. So the last time this punk was listed, it was listed for 30 ETH, and sometime and somehow it's gone up 1,000x or close to it. So the 24k ETH was a flash loan that I think the money that changed hands went and paid the flash loan back on Bouncer. So I'm not really sure it was real, but it definitely got some notoriety.
Yeah, that feels like somebody put a baseball card up on eBay and then had their other account buy that baseball card for 100 times more than it's worth, so that the other baseball cards they own that are the identical, the price goes up. So this doesn't feel right. That doesn't even feel like a good attempt at defrauding people.
Yeah, I think they tried to make it look hard to find, but I mean, at this point now, there's so many people that are good at being able to see what's going on behind the scenes that they came out and said, this is a little fishy right now, but still kind of interesting to hear. Meme coins have definitely started or continued to take off here recently. Three Arrow Capital, which is kind of the reason that Luna went under and we had a huge issue on a bunch of things. They launched their own meme coin, shocker, trying to find ways to get more money. What's crazy is about 84% of it is held by insiders. They also have a 1% tax on every buy and sell, which is crazy to me. It has lost about 7% of its value in the past 10 days, which sounds about right. So probably about 70% more to go in the next 10 days, right? But somehow people still buy their meme coin. Luckily, not too many because it's going down.
Yeah, that's wild. And a 1% tax on transactions means like every time you turn over the entire market cap of the of the coin, now you only have 99% of what was outstanding. And oh, by the way, 84% was already in the hands of the founders. Like those coin metrics don't add up for me.
It's almost like who's buying it, right? Are you creating another wallet and just having the founders go create another wallet and buy it to make it look like it's happening? Something's happening. But
yeah,
there were some interesting meme coin activity going on. One of the traders bought one sol worth of a meme coin, which was about $140, right? 24 hours later, it was worth $450,000. And he bought it probably 12 or 13 minutes after it was created. And we've talked a little bit about Pump.Fun, and it was not the only one he bought. So he bought a bunch of them, and this one kind of took off. What's even crazier is he has yet to sell. He now owns, I think, like 2% of the total market cap. So it is pretty spread out. He's the largest holder. He's not going to be able to sell it all immediately. I think he's split it up now into 5 different wallets to try to throw off people's scent if he sells any. All right. But that one is pretty crazy. And then Mudang, which is another one, there is a guy that turned $800 into $7.5 million. And he has yet to sell any. And I think it's gone down to like 5 million or something at this point. But I'm just like, holy cow. How much more do you expect to get out of this? And it's a meme coin, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you sell a lot of it, then you're going to tank the price, right? I mean, you're a whale. So, but yeah, you would think it's like, you know what, I'm just going to bleed a little bit off, you know, and try not to destroy the market, but turn it into something that may have value in 5 years from now.
Exactly. I think that's all that I had. Anything else that you wanted to mention for this week?
No, I think it was good. Like some real world interactions with people asking about my shirt was good. Like I was at Publix at the checking out after I left the trampoline park, and this lady was like, "What's your shirt mean?" I was like, "Oh, I went to El Salvador, and you know, there's this beach where, you know, everybody's chill, and it's just like a surf town, and everybody, you can buy anything in Bitcoin, and it's really nice." But like, she was really positive about it. "Oh, thanks for talking about it. You know, it's great." I was like, "Yeah, well, thanks for asking." So it was like, you know, nobody approaches me to talk about Bitcoin and is a jerk. It's like Bitcoin is kind of like a classifier of people. It's like, you know, you kind of have to have a bit of a positive outlook on the future, because otherwise, why would you buy Bitcoin? Future is going to be awful and miserable and apocalyptic, and you know, you're just worried about today. So So yeah, I that was kind of an interesting thing. It was it's funny because I've worn that shirt a handful of times in my town, and it might as well be an invisibility cloak. It's like people are don't even want to have anything to do with it. And then down here is different. So that was kind of a neat piece. But yeah, I think that's it for me, man. I think I probably talked too much on the politics side, but I mean, we're in October now, and this is like prime time for Bitcoin to start making moves. And like, it hasn't yet, but it's, you know, it's starting to get exciting. And at the beginning of the year in January, I said my target for this year was 88 to 132. And I still feel like I feel pretty good about it. Like, all we have to do is break through the all-time highs and get a little pump, and then we're into the 80s. So, you know, I don't want to say that. I mean, for all I know, next week we could be at 90. So I feel like to go ahead and get that point in right now.
I think there's so much uncertainty right now that after November 5th, we'll start to see movement one way or the other, right? And it's almost that not to say it doesn't matter who wins, it just takes away the uncertainty, right? So I think the markets in general hate uncertainty, and right now there's so much of it, nothing's happening, because it sounds like there's a ton of people sitting on the sidelines just waiting to see what's going to happen. And there's definitely a more positive near term, depending on if one team wins versus the other. But like we talked about earlier, I think it's going up and to the right no matter what. It's just at what scale.
Yeah, how steep.
Yep. And I it's funny, you talked about having conversations. I actually had a conversation with my six-year-old about Bitcoin, which I've been trying to push on it a little bit, but not force it. And yeah, they both my kids get an allowance to try to understand a little bit more about money. And he's like, why would I want Bitcoin? So it was kind of a fun conversation to start talking and explaining what the difference was between the dollars that he theoretically is using to buy stuff with and what a Bitcoin could possibly do. So hopefully that will continue to flourish over the next weeks and months. But it's interesting that he's actually asking questions about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. My next goal with my kids is to be like, hey, you've had this money for a while and you've been saving it up in your bank or wallet at the house, but like, notice how things are more expensive now than they were when you first started collecting all this money. It's like, try to get them to understand, like, you can't just hold dollars, but it's tough because all they see is you spend dollars. So I want dollars. Like, a dollar means I can buy a candy bar or a stuffed animal or a toy or a whatever, or a video game costume for a character, which is the stupidest way to spend money. But that's what they see, is like, I want this thing. In order to get that thing, I want dollars. So give me dollars and I'll keep them. If I can get them to notice that, like, hey, if you have $100 and you wait a year, you can't buy as much stuff. So maybe when you're holding it, you need to hold it in something else. So that's kind of my next step to light touch, figure out a way to get them to understand that.
Yeah, my kids have to take their allowance and put it into three different buckets: spending, savings, and charity, and they get to choose what they want to do. So my hope is here in the next year, as Bitcoin takes off, be like, okay, look, if you had this money in savings, this is what it is in US dollar, and I set it at a very high rate per year, much more than what you can get today. But if you had that in Bitcoin, this is what it'd be worth. So, and hopefully that starts to open their eyes a little bit here shortly, but time will tell, of course.
Yep. Yeah, that works.
Awesome. Well, as always, great catching up with you, Hal. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.